Hatch is with us. Hello, Sean.
Great to be back.
Nice to have you with us. How's your spring semester been going? So I hesitate to call anything spring, as cold as it's been.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't feel like spring out there, but the semester's going well. We started on the 18th, of course. Planetarium was open much before that for regular public programs, starting right after the beginning of the year, and we've been keeping busy with our shows.
Excellent. Well, we've got a brand new month right around the corner here. We swing into February next week. Let's talk about some of the things you've got going on. The Friday night show that starts about 1 week from this Friday, Stargazers of Africa. Tell us about that.
Yeah, this is a brand new program that we're bringing in. It takes a look at the way a variety of African cultures looked at the sky, and also some of their modern astronomy, like the Square Kilometer Array and some of the larger observatories that have been built in recent years down in Africa. But there's a whole variety of African sky lore that we often don't think of, and this is one way that we can share that with folks.
Excellent. And the Sunday show, starting a week from Sunday, Legends of the Night Sky Orion.
Yeah, fun program for kids and families. That show, of course, tells the classic tale of Orion, how he ended up in the night sky, his love story with Artemis, the moon goddess, all of that set with cartoons. And so Aesop the owl and Socrates the mouse come back to share that story with us in full animated fun.
Outstanding. And for a music show in the month of February, Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah, decided that we wanted to bring that and, you know, tango in the dome, you might say. So we're going to have a little bit of fun with Fleetwood Mac. Of course, this weekend is our last weekend of Prince. That show's been going really spectacularly. And one of our grad students, Nikita, who put that together, did a spectacular job. So it's been a really fun show, and we're really excited about Fleetwood Mac. Andrew's been working on that and getting ready to kick that off, next weekend.
And a special show coming up next Saturday at 4 o'clock, Telescopes, Binoculars, and Stargazing.
Yeah, a good friend of mine, John Meter, who actually used to work at the University of Maine when he was a student way back in the day and now runs Northern Light Planetarium. Or Northern Stars Planetarium, excuse me, out of the Waterville area. We're doing a joint program together to teach people how to use telescopes and binoculars and do some stargazing. A lot of folks will get a telescope or binoculars at Christmas, not be quite sure how to use it, how to set it up, how to work it, all that. So that's what we're going to do with them. Is sort of, it's going to be a very hands-on workshop, so we've limited it to 25 people. But we'll have telescopes and binoculars set up. People can either bring theirs or they can use some of ours. And we'll walk them through the process. And if it's clear, then following that, we'll take them outside and do some stargazing from the back area of the Astronomy Center as well.
That's great. Now, Bruce, what were you saying you just got?
My wife got me a monocular one that's really nice because it's easier for me to use than the binoculars. I don't know why, but the monocular.
So it's a monocular. Yeah. Oh, okay, so a single. So basically a
handheld telescope.
Yeah, handheld telescope.
It's really easy to use. I really like it. I'm having fun.
Great. Yeah.
And you were telling us before we came on this afternoon, Sean, that you've got a very timely and important science lecture series.
Yeah, the bulk of our science lectures this year have been on climate change, but this one coming up is going to be, COVID, Alpha, Delta, and Omicron. Is the name of the show. But we have Dr. Melissa McGinnis, virologist from UMaine, and Dr. Ben King, who does genomics. And the two of them have been leading the charge at UMaine on COVID-19 research. They're going to be talking about, that latest research, sort of where they see things going. Is it moving from pandemic to endemic, which a lot of folks think it is? Talk about latest treatments, some of the research and ways that they're working on, treatments and vaccines and a whole variety of things to help get this thing under control. So I think it'll be very important. It's really interesting. Melissa McGinnis gave our science lecture series like 2 weeks before the initial shutdown on campus. And we had booked her months before to talk about a virus that infects the brain that she was her primary area of research. But by the time she was coming to the planetarium, this is like 2 or 3 weeks before the main COVID thing hit, we said, we should spend some time on COVID. And wouldn't you know it, it was like 2 weeks later, all of a sudden everything was shut down. And we, that was really when the main lockdown started and all that kind of stuff. So, but she's really great and we're thrilled to have Ben King. This will be his first time at the planetarium. Two of them are sort of going to tag team given all the things that are happening with COVID. So yeah, invite folks to come out for it. I think it's really something if you're interested in figuring out a way to keep you safe and learn about what's going on in the latest. It'll be a great program.
It's funny when you say she was there about 2 years ago, doesn't it seem like about a decade?
I know, you know, in BC, before COVID times, as we call it, you know, I keep hoping, you know, that eventually we'll get to, you know, after COVID, but who knows? So, you know, but I think it's good. And there are, the good news is there seems to be some things moving forward in getting us, you know, at least somewhat back to normal. I think there's, or the new normal, but making it easier.
Well, and thankful that we've got, well, the leadership we have here in the state of Maine as opposed to some other states.
Yes, very much so, and hoping we'll be able to keep it that way. So,
nice.
Yes.
Sean Latch with us from the Wilson Power Astronomy Center and the Jordan Planetarium. What have we got to look forward to in the skies in the month of February?
Well, right now we're sort of having a bit of a changeover, if you will. So, actually, as of Monday, Mercury went into conjunction with the Sun. Saturn's going to be doing that in the 4th. So right now, basically, we only have Jupiter in our night sky. And then if you get up in the early morning, you'll see Mars and Venus there. The 1st of February is the new moon, and that's a very special new moon. That's the Chinese New Year. So, of course, the Chinese New Year's is a lunar-based calendar, and so that's that is when their New Year begins. It's the year of the tiger, and so there'll be a bunch of stuff there. The full moon in February is going to be on the 16th, and that's called the snow moon, though I hear we're going to get a bunch of snow this weekend, so we'll have, you know, but that'll be the main moon phasing for that month, I should say, in terms of February. But yeah, planets will be moving into the morning sky. And, you know, winter is always a great time to get out because you have Orion, which is high overhead. And, you know, even with basic binoculars or a monocular, you can, you know, look just below his belt and get a view of the Orion Nebula, the Pleiades star cluster, which is, or Subaru, as the Japanese call it, you know, in Taurus is up there. And that's a perfect object for binoculars. As well, you know, because you have the wide field of view and really see the entire cluster. There's a lot of great star clusters to see in Orion, in the winter sky. And Orion in particular, we do this, you know, of course, with all our shows, we walk you through the sky. But winter is such a great time because if you can find Orion, you can use him to locate about 6 or 7 other constellations in what we call the winter circle. And it's some of the brightest stars and constellations of the entire year. So it's a really great time to dip your toe into stargazing, even if it is kind of cold and you got to bundle up.
Distant object we can see with the naked eye?
Well, it's hard to place a single thing that way, but I would say one of the most distant is probably the Andromeda Galaxy.
That's
which, yeah, which is about 2 million light years away. I mean, we see other stars and they're very far away, but the Andromeda Galaxy is probably, you know, the most distant thing we can see with our unaided eye. Yep.
I wanted to ask you about this too. Where is the James Webb Space Telescope? How close is it to getting into its final position.
Yeah, it basically has arrived at L2, which is about 1 million miles away from the Earth, which is really amazing. Mirror segments are locked into place. Everything unfolded and went as scheduled. And so right now it's starting to ramp up into its engineering mode, you might say. So there'll be a whole variety of testing getting it ready before it will send images back. So right now we're expecting images back in early summer, maybe June, hopefully. Once it does so, you know, we'll be doing events there because we are one of the NASA community sites for that. But the telescope has been performing magnificently, and it's really been incredible to see, you know, how it, you know, the launch was perfect and it just moved on out. And this thing had to unfold like origami, given the size, because it's 6 times larger than the Hubble telescope and basically had to fit in an Ariane rocket. So it was like origami, but everything has worked, perfectly so far. So hopefully they'll get it out there. And this telescope really will revolutionize how we're looking at things. You know, tomorrow night we have our last showing of EXO, which looks at exoplanets. And one of the things that they're planning to do with JWST is be able to actually look for biosignature gases in exoplanetary atmospheres. This will be the first time we think we can actually do this. If we do discover that might be a signal that there is actually life beyond Earth out there, not to mention all the stuff it's going to do with really deep space in terms of galaxies and large-scale structures. So this telescope there's, you know, really some amazing things that will probably come out of it in time.
And part of that's because of its ability to see essentially in a different spectrum than what Hubble could see.
Right. It's going to do the bulk of its work. Well, really, all of its work is going to be in infrared astronomy. So it's, you know, that and the that combined with the larger diameter, of course, is going to really allow them to be looking back to near, you know, the first galaxies, the first stars. They really think that that's going to help them get back in and see the universe in a different way.
I was reading something the other day, and I may have the figures off, but it was something like, you know, if the universe is roughly 14.6 billion years old, the James Webb telescope will enable us to see back essentially light from, what, 14.3 billion years ago or something like that?
Yeah, it should go pretty far back. I mean, you know, when we look, when we see WMAP or, you know, the Wilkerson microwave background radiation or cosmic background radiation, you're seeing basically the baby picture of the universe when it was roughly, you know, 375,000-400,000 years old, because beyond that, it was too hot and opaque to see through. So, but we, even with Hubble and with the really large ground-based observatories using adaptive optics, which allow them to see even farther than Hubble nowadays, you still only go so far back. But it does, they do think that JWST is going to really push that envelope back even farther, probably allowing us to see sort of those first galaxies, those first stars, which, you know, will hopefully help us understand the overall formation of the universe and some of the ways it came to be.
Barring any big surprises, is the next big discovery learning more about dark matter?
It's hard to say. I mean, I think, you know, with JWST, there's, like I say, there's the possibility of discovering biosignatures and looking at, you know, large-scale structure. Dark matter, probably you're going to be using other tools, but that is one of the big things in astronomy right now that most cosmologists think will have a solid answer to what dark matter truly is, hopefully in the next decade or two. With dark energy, they think that's going to take longer. That's probably a bigger question, you know, but once we understand dark matter, that will help us probably with the dark energy question. Because really only, you know, 5% of our universe we understand, which is the baryonic matter that you and I and the desk and our food is made up of. But then you have, you know, about 25% that's dark matter and another 70% that's dark energy. So, yep.
That's fascinating stuff. Sean Latch from the Person Power Astronomy Center and the Jordan Planetarium at the University of Maine. Great to see you, Sean.
Great to see you guys.
Have a good month, and we'll check in with you again soon.
Sounds great. Keep looking up.
Yeah, absolutely. It is 17 after 4 here on Downtown.